in that it's a drug case where the drug quantity was pled, but it was never proven. At least it was not proven sufficiently to the jury. If the court recalls, the jury couldn't make a finding on drug quantity. They found that there was crack involved in this, in these multi hand-to-hand sales, but they couldn't come up with a total amount, an aggregate amount. They were given the various choices on the verdict form of less than 5 grams, over 5 grams, over 50 grams, and they couldn't agree. And what that led to was the court undertaking at sentencing to make his own determination as to drug quantity on a preponderance of the evidence.
Let me see if I can rephrase your argument at least. I mean, I think you've got some real problems given the cases that have been decided in this court, but it seems to me you're essentially saying that the district court shouldn't be able to mix and match sub parts of 841. So once you have the no quantity finding and you move to capital 841B1 capital C,
yes,
your position is that just as a matter of the way Congress has structured this statute, I wouldn't go off onto Apprendi if I were you, but the way Congress has structured this statute, if you're in capital C, you're in capital C. And so there's no mandatory minimum and there is a maximum of whatever it is, 30 years. And had there been a finding of more than 50 grams, you would have been in capital A. There would have been the 20 years. So that it strikes me that the argument to be made here, if there is one at all in the face of cases like United States against Clark, isn't really about Apprendi. It's about Congress structuring the statute. And let me suggest to you a hypothetical different statute. You could have had 841 that would have had, you know, Part A, mandatory minimums, you know, more than 50 grams, 20 years or whatever. And then Part B, mandatory maximum, and you could have had that. And in that kind of statute, it doesn't seem to me there would be any mix and match problem. You would just go to whatever you went to. But the statute, if you have an argument at all, I think it really flows from the way the statute is structured.
And I don't disagree with that, Your Honor. And I think that's what the Second Circuit Court undertook in Gonzales. They said that because of the peculiar way that 841 is structured and has been written by Congress, the minimum and the mandatory follow each other in A and in B and in C. They're linked, they correspond, and every time the maximum changes, the minimum goes along with it and vice versa. And you cannot deconstruct that, because it's not the kind of statute that you're outlining. It's the statute that it is. But where I disagree with you is I think you can go back to Apprendi. And I think the Second Circuit did go back to Apprendi.
I know the Second Circuit did, but my problem with going back to Apprendi is I think that slides you right into Harris, at which point you're in trouble.
Well, I think Harris is distinguishable, though, on the facts. I think because it was decided on a gun violation under 924, that is a different type of statute, where the minimum is set depending on whether the gun was possessed or brandished or shot off or whatever the circumstances are, but the maximum remains the same. So you don't have what you have. You don't have the paradigm that you have in 841. So I think Harris can be distinguished. That's what the Second Circuit does. And it also continues to fall back on the literal reading and wording of Apprendi, which says that any fact that increases the prescribed range of penalties is a fact that must be found by the jury. It's an element. It's not a sentencing factor anymore. It can be found by the judge at sentencing on a preponderance. It's a fact that must be found by the jury. And 841 does set up those ranges.
Why do you think your argument would be weaker if it's just based on the statute instead of Apprendi? I mean, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but I'm getting that impression.
I don't think it's a weak argument based on the construction of the present statute. And I think that it hasn't been ruled on explicitly by the Supreme Court. I think this is another avenue where Apprendi may take us or may lead us. But I think that the reasoning in Gonzales is sound, that quantity is quantity is quantity. It's an element, and it has to be found by the jury. And where it's not...
As I'm sure you're aware, we have expressly held that quantity is not an element. And, of course, the Supreme Court held in Harris against the United States that it doesn't have to be found by a jury for purposes of setting mandatory minimum penalties. So I want to reemphasize Judge Wood's question even more strongly. And isn't your only argument one based on the statute?
I mean, it seems to me your argument would be that it's a sentencing factor, but once the jury has indicated the quantity that would lead you to the right sentencing structure, either, you know, 50 grams, 5 grams, not saying anything, at that point, you're into that statutory subsection with all that it may have to say about sentencing. So I'm not sure that this is a path that would be feasible without looking at other cases this court has decided, but as I am trying to think through this, that's where I get to.
Yeah, and again, I don't disagree with you, Judge. The quandary here was that the jury made no finding, obviously, and the real question is, does the entire situation then revert to the default statute, to the C statute? Because we don't know what the quantity is, and they didn't find it. And the district judge himself, I think, was stymied by it. The parties all seem to be. Like I said, this appears to be an unusual case where it was presented to the jury, and they didn't agree. We don't know why. We don't know if they came close to any particular amount within that range of 0 to over 50, but they didn't.
Well, arguably the statute foresees that possibility, or there wouldn't be a subpart capital C.
Correct. Yes. So. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Kister. Mr. Hartzler.
Good morning. Joe Hartzler on behalf of the United States. I'm glad we're not discussing issue two, but I did want to point out, to dispose of that, that the gun enhancement is an issue that the court likely will not have to address if it resolves the first issue. The first issue, assuming that you decide that the mandatory minimum does apply, then the guidelines would have fallen below the mandatory minimum, as Ms. Kister points out in her brief. But the mandatory minimum, 240 months, would be the sentence, so the guidelines would become irrelevant. The gun enhancement, the two-point gun enhancement, would not matter whatsoever. I, of course, was not prepared to address this fascinating issue about the statutory structure, but I think that it potentially bleeds into Apprendi. The statute establishes the elements in its 841A section and the sentencing factors in 841B. Now, we know that since Apprendi, the maximum sentence is also an element of the offense.
No. We have continually rejected defendants' arguments that the amount needed to raise the maximum is an element of the offense. It's just not. It is a sentencing consideration. But as a consequence of Apprendi, it's a sentencing consideration that must be decided by the jury. But it's not an element.
Fair
if
right.
It's an element, failure to allege and prove it means the defendant must be acquitted. But actually, under the statutory structure, failure to allege and prove it means that the lowest penalty applies. That's the difference between being an element and not being an element.
I appreciate that. Thank you for the clarification. As to whether or not, once you fall within subsection capital C, you must stay within subsection capital C, I think the problem there is that we're dealing with sentencing factors.
But why is that so? Why, if Congress has chosen to write a statute that says here's what the maximum is, and if it's that maximum, we also want this other minimum, what is it that tells you that Congress wants the government to jump around like that? I mean, clearly you wouldn't want them to jump around in a way adversely to the government's interest.
I didn't hear the last phrase. It's
well, I mean, you wouldn't want to say it's a lifetime maximum, but no minimum. You know, we're going to take the maximum from subpart A, but we're going to jump over to subpart C for the minimum. I mean, the government would violently oppose that, I'm sure, that whenever it's a more than 50 gram, the government's there saying, well, that means that it's a 20-year mandatory minimum. But on your logic, you could say, well, it's 20, it's more than 50 grams, and thus it's a lifetime maximum, but we're going to use the minimum in subpart C this time. I mean, why is it a one-way street?
I'm not sure it's a one-way street. I guess what
but
I...
But you want the maximum from C to be coupled with the minimum from A.
That's fair.
Then
that's
you don't correct. Want the maximum from A to be coupled with the minimum from C.
Right. I understand your point.
Okay.
All I'm trying to suggest is that once we get to sentencing, then it's up to the judge to determine what sentencing factor applies. And I do think that you could shift between from A, which was decided in this case, capital C, decided as a result of the jury non-finding. So assuming it is a factor that the jurors must find, as Judge Easterbrook clarifies, the jurors must find but not an element, then we move to the sentencing phase. We're in a different phase. We apply the guidelines. There are various factors the judge considers. It's not as a result of a jury finding. It doesn't need to be a jury finding. So the statute book is now open for the judge to conclude what sentencing factor applies to this defendant. After we know what the jury has concluded, the jury has decided the maximum. We know that by C. Now we can move into a different phase. And in your hypothetical, I think what you're saying is if the jury decided the maximum, in this case is a good example, had the jury decided the amount of drugs, then we know which section we would have been in. Had the jury decided the same
thing. Sure, it would have been either A or B, presumably.
Right.
But or maybe C if they thought it was 2 grams or something. It has to be more than 5, I guess. More than 50, more than 5. But my issue here is I've stared at this statute, and we certainly see plenty of 841 cases, as you well know, is what justifies taking the statute Congress actually wrote and breaking it apart into the hypothetical statute that I suggested to Ms. Kister.
What justifies it?
Yeah. What justifies saying that once the jury has pointed the court in the direction of the right subsection to go to, why you then get to put that off in the shelf and then redo the whole thing when you're looking at minima?
Because the jury is deciding a sentencing factor to determine the maximum. And you're certainly not persuaded by my point, but it is that it...
Well, I'm just trying to think through this statute. I don't even know if Clark lets us do all of this, but it's something I think needs to be thought about in a way that it perhaps hasn't been thought about before.
Well, I would encourage you to allow supplemental briefing because, as you know, it's not something that we addressed in our briefs. I'm sort of firing from the hip here, but I'm guessing that it is because we're talking about two different phases, much as we do when we apply the guidelines. The jurors can make some finding, or more particularly, do not make the finding, or the drugs frequently in the 841 cases are not presented to the jury to determine a quantity. And then it's entirely up to the judge. We're in the default. We're in subsection C immediately because the issue hasn't been presented to the jury. The unusual thing about this case, as Ms. Kister has pointed out, is it was presented to the jury and they couldn't decide. But normally, the jurors don't decide quantity, or if they do, then we know where we are. We know which subsection we're in.
Did Sherman testify about this 40 buys? Was that in a second trial, or did he testify in the first trial? This is on the
co-defendant?
Yeah. Well,
Sherman?
Whoever he was.
He testified at...
He bought from Bennett.
Right, he testified from at both trials, I believe. Testified in the first trial, for sure. He testified
did.
In the first trial.
So
yeah.
the jury had that before them, at least, about these 40 buys.
The jury had that information.
And
the jury didn't even find that there was more than 5 grams.
I know. But the judge did use that. And I just wanted to make sure, because he said something about the second trial, and I wasn't clear that he took that from a different trial, but it was in this trial.
The judge decided not to use the evidence from the second trial.
Okay.
He just used the evidence from Adrian Bennett's trial to conclude that there was more than 50
grams. And Sherman did testify in that trial.
Sherman did testify in that trial. Yes. So I'm hoping that we'll receive an order for supplemental briefing on this issue if the court concludes that it's going to be decisive in this case.
We'll let you know if we think more briefs are in order.
Thank you.
Nothing further. Pardon?
Nothing further.
Okay. Good. Thank you, Ms. Kister. And again, we appreciate your willingness to take the appointment here.